Maurice J. Cox has been a fixture in the Twin Cities music scene for decades now, lending his powerful yet intimate voice to projects like Willie and the Bees, the Soul Tight Committee, and many more. In fact, John Bream from The Strib called him Mr. Everything for a darn good reason. And you name any set of Minnesota-centric music awards, and J. Cox probably has a couple on his break front. But the way the man earns the respect of the music world is on stage. And he's going to be on stage on Tuesday, November 28th, that's next Tuesday, over the Dakota with We Still Are. Mr. J. Cox, thank you very much for visiting Jazz 88.
Sean, thank you so much for having me.
Now, this is an 8-piece group, and some of the of your more modern music that I've been really connected to, it was really stripped down. You did that record in 2019 called Maurice J. Cox Stripped Down.
Yes.
Basically just you and a guitar for the Grammy.
And two guitars and vibes.
Okay, two guitars and vibes. Now you're cooking in front of this 8-piece band. Your voice belongs everywhere. But what's the difference for you when you're working with a bigger ensemble compared to doing something a lot more intimate?
Oh, everybody's used to hearing me rip and scream. I mean, that's what I'm known for, I guess. A lot of people haven't found out that I actually am a singer.
Right.
I don't just scream. And we went to put out the album. One, we didn't have any money. And two, I just thought, you know, how about maybe something completely different? Instead of ripping and screaming with horns bashing and everything, how about just some quieter music and just guitars and voice? And then we added our friend Vince Hyman on vibes.
Yeah.
And we wanted that contrast. It's just such a departure from what I'm known for doing.
Yeah.
But most people don't know that I've sang in 3 operas. I have a Nat King Cole show that tours, and there's other things, other projects I do continuously. So it's just a totally different thing and different ways of expressing myself. I love the sound of horns and punching, and because I'm a horn player at heart.
Yeah.
But I love actually singing and using my voice well. So that's what Stripped Down was. Here's the other side. But you won't hear that side. Dakota.
You're going to be screaming it up at the Dakota?
Yeah, we're going to be blasting. My band is my dear friend and brother, Willie Walker, who passed away 4 years ago yesterday. At 2 o'clock, we were hoisting a drink, all of us wherever we were. Well, he had a band that he called We Are. Lamest name I ever heard of for a band, I thought, back then. And after he passed, I played the memorial show at Minnesota Music Cafe, my favorite music bar and the best music venue in the Twin Cities.
There we go.
I had to get that plug in. I did the show. I had to learn. They said, the band came to me and said, well, would you do some songs, some of Willie's songs for the show? And I said, sure, just write them down and I'll sing them. He got back to me a day or two later with a list of 23 songs, most of whom I'd never heard.
Oh, let alone sang. You'd never heard.
Even heard. So I had like 3 weeks to learn 23 songs. We somehow got through it. And after that, the band came to me and said, well, you know, would you consider, it's the last thing you ever wanted to do, would you consider taking over and fronting the band now? And I had my no ready. I said no. I said, thanks, I'm flattered, but no.
Yeah.
I said, well, you know, you suffer with it so many times when it's on the road. I said, yeah, when I with my own band.
Right.
And he says, well, and then they said, well, they put the hook in my mouth and said, it's what Willie would want.
How do you say no to that?
So that's how I ended up with the band. We started out doing a bunch of Willie's, a bunch of songs Willie did and some other songs. I thought, God, let's change this name first thing. Get rid of this dumb name. God, We Are. What kind of name? We and the letter R. So we sat around one day and trying to come up with names, and people are tossing out this and that. Nothing stuck. Nothing sounded any good. And after about 3 hours, and we were about half drunk, what it dawned on me, oh God, are we gonna have to call this band We Still Are? Because we can't think of anything better? And everybody looked around and went, there it is.
There's the name.
We still are. It's only slightly less stupid sounding.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to give all the respect in the world to Willie Walker, of course, but We Still Are has...
We Are is not one of the best names ever. Nor was Willie and the Bees, nor was Derek and the Dominoes. Bands so-and-so and.
Yeah.
So
what ends up mattering is the music you make, and you've made some beautiful music. In fact, you sent over some. We're going to listen to some throughout this conversation, because it's really amazing to hear your voice, and your voice has been a part of so many different moments in the Twin Cities music scene. Right? It's been this voice that you can track through recordings from the '60s, '70s, '80s, '90s. You know, right? This is a thing.
Okay.
So I had the opportunity, I think, probably about 10, 11 years ago, to play a little bit of music with you.
Yes, sir. You can't see me blush on the radio, can you?
No, that doesn't. We can't afford those microphones.
Good.
I can usually tell pretty early if a vocalist is about it, if they take it seriously on the first swing, right? There's some vocalists go, I'm saving it all for the show, and they, you know, barely switch through. You walk in and you deliver the goods. How do you stay that true to the art for this long? How do you make sure you're doing it the right way every time you grab the microphone?
Because it's not about me. It's about the music. And that's all that really matters. And if I can be true to whatever genre I'm singing, and if it's a piece of music that I find some affinity for, I'll try and sing anything. That's how I ended up singing in operas. Yeah, okay, why not? It sounds like fun. And anything that sounds like fun. And when you guys came to me with that for the Prince show at the Fitzgerald, the songs I would have wanted to do were already taken. And you told me the ones that were left, and I, that's it? I don't get to, no 1999, no red Corvette, no. And you, what was left? I Would Die For You, which I didn't think was a blessed piece of music particularly.
Sure, but,
And my only thought is, well, if I'm going to sing one of these songs, how can I bring something to this song that nobody else brings? I mean, that's not just for the sake of being novel or being different. It's just rehashing or repeating something someone else has done isn't what I want to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to try and change somebody's music. I'm not about that. I just like to do something with a feel that's different but still remains true to the music. And we came up with the idea of slowing it down like that.
Yeah.
And first I thought, fine, that's as good as anything. And as you and your band started playing, I'm going, yeah, he never thought of that, but make a badass soul ballad.
Yeah.
And that's what we came up with. And I was thrilled to do it. It was just, it's another project, another way to use my voice, another way to try different types of music. I'll sing polkas.
Yeah.
I used to sing some songs with Trailer Trash.
Yeah.
Country and Western, love it. I'll sing anything. If this song's a good song, a good piece of music stands on its own.
That's right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who's the piece of music. If you're true to the music on some level and don't try to change it up and make it about you, and that worked.
Oh, man, it works for you in so many different applications, and that is a beautiful thing. This particular one is on November 28th, so next Tuesday, We Still Are. Now, you talked about your love of doing Minnesota Music Cafe. This particular show is at the Dakota, another great stage in town.
That's my other great love. I got to give Lowell a plug. Lowell is the first person who ever gave me a jazz gig singing.
No way.
Everybody knew me as playing, and way back when they were over at Bandana Square, I was singing jazz, and I knew I could. And I went on to club owners and said, you know, how would you like me? Pay me to sing some jazz. No.
Just no.
I went to my buddy Kenny Horst at the Artist Quarter. Kenny, how'd you like to hire me singing some jazz and Maurice. Nobody's gonna want to see a guy singing jazz. They want to see a woman singing jazz. I said, well, you know, they come to see a woman. I said, well, what if a guy's singing jazz and he's not that bad? Wouldn't maybe some women come out to see him and some men would come out to see those women? Still a way. And nope.
Nope, Kenny wasn't having it.
Kenny wasn't having that. I went to a couple other people and they almost laughed me out of, oh, come on, man, you're an R&B singer. You can't, nobody's going to come and see you sing jazz. Okay, well, fine. And I finally went to Lowell and I said, Lowell, we'd known each other quite a few years. I said, would you consider hiring me to sing jazz in your club? Sure, Maurice, when?
Yeah.
I said, well, I'm trying to get over that. And I said, well, what have you got? He said, how about next Monday? Yeah, you have a piano player? I said, Thomas West. And I said, yeah, I got a piano player. And he hired us. Well, from then, who knew, went on to win the Jazz Award, win part of the Blues Awards, in the Blues Hall of Fame, and just the year before, the year that this was recorded, was for the Dakota, and that week, oh, that was the same spring I was inducted into the, let me see, Legends of Jazz, Minnesota Legends of Jazz, the Elders.
Yeah.
So what? The Elders. Okay. You call an elder. No, I didn't mind it at all. And the recognition was nice. When I won the Jazz Award and the Music Awards, I had planned on this nice little speech I was going to give when they, because, you know, I come to the Music Awards and my old band, Soul Tight, won cover band 1 year. And so I thought, well, now I've won the Jazz Award. Now I have a platform. I can get up and maybe say a couple of things over the mic and give people something to think about. And what I was going to say was, it's a wonderful award. I'm really appreciative of the thought. But in the future, maybe you'd want to perhaps give this award to somebody that doesn't get gigs, somebody that's really good and striving and hasn't been discovered by anybody. And that award might actually get them some work.
Mm.
So I was gonna, that's what I was gonna say. That never happened. Because I get down to First Avenue that night and I ask the stage manager, I don't know who it was, and they said, oh, we gave your award earlier this afternoon. So what? Yeah, we gave your award around 3 o'clock this afternoon. Just got those awards out of the way, Jazz Award, blah, blah, blah. That's what they thought of jazz. Then I went, well, okay, fine. So where's my award? I'm bummed. He goes away and comes back in 15 minutes and hands me a pizza box, and a small pizza box, and says, here's your award. And I opened the lid. This is the pizza box. I opened the lid on the pizza box. There's my nice Lucite award. And I, whoop-de-doo. And that's how much it meant to them and about how much it meant to me. Well, thanks a lot for that. And so actually winning the Legends of Jazz, it actually moved me a little bit because, yeah, I had no one had actually acknowledged that I'm a jazz singer.
Yeah.
But I don't call myself a jazz singer. I'm a singer.
You
give me a song.
Give me a song. I'll find a way.
Yeah, if I can find some way to fit myself in there, I'll try anything. Stupid songs. I'll try anything. If it sounds good, yeah, okay, got a beat. Yeah, I can dance it. I'm in. Ballad, that's what happened to I Would Die For You, slowing it down like that.
Find your way in there.
It's just, and you call me the next day when we recorded it. You called me the next day and said, you just got into work, and the station manager had already listened to it and was asking if they could use it to promote
yeah.
the show. I said, oh, that's just scrub vocal. They like it. They'd like to use it. He said, all right. I said, sure. And it went over pretty well. And then I started getting calls from people around the country, friends of mine, say, can I get a copy of that? I heard it on the radio. Can I get a copy of that? I thought a copy of what?
It's just a scratch.
But it was something that was, and I don't consider this about me, it was something that I was blessed to bring something to the song slightly different. I didn't want to change the song, change the message, just a slightly different feel, but still his song. And I thought I did that pretty well.
Oh, I think you did too. I think you get some gold stars there. I'm chatting with Maurice J. Cox, and it's been really fun to find out about this particular show that you're doing next Tuesday over the Dakota with We Still Are. Let's talk about you. You talk about fitting yourself in. You fit in Cuba, right? You were down in Cuba with Chito Herrera. Tell me, second time. So you've done that twice?
Yeah.
All right. What years have you done it?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. Okay.
I was there with Nachito.
Yeah.
And I got to spend 10 days in Havana.
Oh my gosh.
Expenses paid, flight, everything. 10 days in Havana. It was amazing. This time. And Nachito does things kind of sometimes on the spur of the moment, and you don't have much time to prepare. And he told me last summer, he knew about a couple of my issues, and he told me last summer that you got to be ready to go to Cuba. And I said, what are you talking about? In January, we go to Cuba. Go back to Havana. And I said, okay, just let me know. And I didn't hear from him for about 3 months. And then the next thing I hear is like October or November. And I said, you ready? What? We're going. So it was a festival. This year it was a festival that built around Nachito.
Yeah.
And he got in touch and said, you're going to Cuba with me again. How do I know I'm going? Because I said so. How am I going to get there? We'll figure that out. And so the first time I went, it was the same thing behind my Nat King Cole show. Nachito and I had the same manager for a while. And he said, Nat King Cole was huge in Cuba. He said, you know, would you like to go down there and sing some Nat King Cole in Cuba? And I said, of course. And so then he says, you know, what would really be cool would be if you could learn to sing a song or two in Spanish. And that would be really easy. It would be really great. And okay. In Spanish, huh? And Nachito's daughter, this was out at Nachito's house, and his daughter, Mirdala, says, I will teach you how to sing that song with an Havana accent. And I took her at her word, and I started practicing it, blah, blah, blah. I end up at Hope. Down at the hotel in Havana, I'm sitting on the veranda still listening to the song through headphones. Siempre que prete junto que cuando como y donde tu siempre. Phonetically trying to get this. And I'm sitting on the veranda going through this stuff, and I get to the punchline of the song. This is a song called Perhaps, 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 Quizás. And I get right to the point, I'm singing along, and from three tables away, three guys, quizás, quizás, quizás. And I find out it's like one of the most famous songs in Cuba. Nat King Cole was last in Cuba. He's perhaps the first really international superstar. He was last in Havana the year before the revolution.
Oh, wow.
In Havana, you mention Nat King Cole's name to anybody that's over 50 years old. You say, and when I was being introduced, like several days before my performance in the program, people would introduce me to dignitaries. Nachito's mother-in-law introducing me to these dignitaries that I'd just seen up on the stage with bouquets of roses and things. And they introduced me to these people. And Maurice Jacob, he's singer. Oh, si, senor. Good to meet you, senor. And then they say, Maurice sings Nat King Cole. What?
That's the alarm, yeah.
You sing not King Cole? Senor! And then it's the Abrazo. Then they're hugging me and pounding me on the back and say, not King Cole. People still clutch their breast and suck in a breath. You mentioned Nat King Cole's name in Havana to this day. And so that's how I ended up going again. Quick thing about the show, this year, yeah, it was just in January. Get done, and I had to spend the night in Miami, and then the next day the charter to Jose Marti. And we're getting off the plane, my girl and I told her the first time that I was there, I said, I will never go to someplace this beautiful without you.
Yeah.
And so she was going with me one way, or I wasn't going.
Yeah.
And so we get off the flight at Jose Marti, and there's no jetway, you know, walk on the tarmac. And it's drizzling rain, and here's people in the terminal, these young women in uniforms. One's got a sign saying Maurice Jacox, and the other sign saying Satish. And I'm like, what the hell? I said, I'm Maurice. This way, senor.
Red
they escort carpet. Me quickly through customs, both of us. And then this woman comes up and says, senor, you relax, and we'll take you to the VIP lounge. I said, VIP lounge? They didn't have a VIP lounge 10 years ago. And there's this woman. She looks like somebody's grandmother in street clothes. Everybody in the airport is military.
Oh.
And this woman's in street clothes, but people got out of her way. And she's got to be some. And those are the people you were scared of, the people that didn't have uniforms, because they had real power. And so we went up to the VIP lounge, hung out. And she comes and tells us the bus is ready. She comes and gets us. And it was like Moses parting the Red Sea, and a huge crowd. And if you're waiting somebody coming in, you can't wait in the terminal. You have to wait outside. Only people flying in or out can go in the terminal. And so this huge throng of people outside. And this little woman, she must have been 4'10". And she just starts walking in the crowd, and the crowd just parted. And we're walking behind her going, whoa.
Who is she?
Whoa. So we get to the hotel, and there Nachito and his wife greet us. Nachito and I sat up and drank rum till about 4 in the morning, and just exhausted. Fell in the bed. I get up at 9 o'clock in the morning, go down to the lobby for breakfast, and so where's Nachito? Oh, he's in the theater. I said, what? He was at the theater at 9. Okay. So there's a bus that takes us to the theater. We were only on the ground for 72 hours. We didn't see anything. We saw out the window of the bus, we saw the theater. As I get to the theater and the orchestra's just getting ready to take a break, and I recognize the maestro, and I walk up to him and say, pardon, maestro. And he looks around and sees me. Face lights up, grabs my hand, he's pumping my hand. I just looked at him and said, so you haven't forgotten me in 10 years. And he laughs and then turns to the orchestra and says something in Spanish. And a 110-piece orchestra jumps to their feet and give me a standing ovation. I haven't sang a note yet. I later found out that Nachito had been telling people all week that I was the best singer in America. That had something to do with it. But I was supposed to be singing a duet with a young Cuban singer. And when we checked into the hotel, I asked Nachito, so I practiced a song that we're going to sing. I've got it all down. It's perfect. He says, oh, you're not singing that no more. I'm not? What am I singing? You're gonna sing, I'll introduce a young woman, you're gonna sing with her, and you're gonna sing, one of Ned's great songs, and Unforgettable.
Okay.
The duet with Natalie, yeah, which Nat was dead how many years before that? 20 years? And so, okay, and they introduced me to the young woman. And the day of the show, we spent some time rehearsing. Day of the show, bus is late picking us up at the hotel. We get to the theater, and Nachito says, okay, you're going to sing this. And so I look on the program, and it says my name, and it says I'm going to sing Unforgettable and L-O-V-E. It says right there. I come up with the young woman, what was her name? Oh, I can't think of it. Anyway, we're introduced, and I see here's what's going to happen. They introduce us, we walk out, I escort you to your mic, I step over to my mic, and we wait for our cue. Cool. Got this all down, because there's no time to rehearse, because the show's going to start in an hour. Okay, so I'm looking at the program, and I'm sitting back in the dressing room, and somebody comes, Maurice, now. Oh, we're supposed to be fourth down. I said, no. So they lead me through this snake's nest of cables backstage. They're no tech, not low tech, no tech. And so I get out and I escort her. I escort her to her mic. I step over to my mic, and I'm expecting to hear la da 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 la 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 da 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 Unforgettable.
Yeah.
I'm all ready. And I hear yellow yellow la 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 la. And the 110-piece orchestra is playing Mona Lisa. And the young woman, her name was Wendy's. I remember it now. I look at Wendy's, she looks like a deer in the headlights. I said, sure. And she just took two steps back from her mic.
Yeah.
And I stepped forward and I just did it. I thought, I had no idea. It wasn't even, we were supposed to do that at all.
Yeah.
And so we did that, and we did Unforgettable and brought the house down and blah, blah, blah. But the program was all these incredible players. And Nachito, when he was 13, made his classical music debut in Havana because he was the student of a man named Fred Fernando. What kind of name is Fred for a human? Fred Fernando. Well, he's like the greatest living Cuban composer and conductor and pianist. And he was Nachito's mentor.
Wow.
And he played, he said, in my debut, I played Rocky II. What are you talking about? What? I played Rocky II for my debut in Havana. Rocky II. It took me a while to figure out he meant Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony.
I didn't get it. I'm thinking Rocky Sylvester
II.
Stallone?
Okay. Rocky II. Okay, got it. Well, in the program, now, on the stage is a 110-piece orchestra. Then there's a big band. There's a 90-voice choir and a salsa band. It's like over 150 people, almost 200 people. And at one point, they're all on stage together.
Oh my God.
So one point in the show, Nachito introduces Fred Fernando. Nachito flew over another grand piano, and they come out facing each other, and they play this beautiful piece. I just sat there like, oh my. And they traded back and forth. It's like, you could have heard a pin drop in the place. They just traded this amazing music back and forth. The first time I'd heard Fred Fernando play was the last time I was in Havana. And Bruce Henry was in Havana too. And we heard these violins play this little overture before the orchestra started. And I had to get up and walk out of the theater and go out in the lobby because I was crying so much. And I got in the lobby, and there's Bruce Henry out in the lobby wiping his eyes, too. And I went, what the hell, man? It's so beautiful. I said, yeah, it was. Well, these two, when they sat and played opposite each other, just wove a spell over the whole theater. It's amazing. And so, yeah, I've got a thing for the Cuban people.
And it sounds like they got a thing for you.
Amazing people.
Yeah.
There's anyone who's never been to Cuba, you can still go. You just can't do it from here. All you have to do is fly out of Mexico City or fly out of Canada, and you can fly direct to Jose Marti Airport. That's all it takes. And I was just telling the vibe player in my other group, he was talking about how envious he was that I went this year. It's still this year, God. And I said, you can go.
Yeah.
He said, well, I said, just don't leave him here. Go to Mexico and get a flight. He said, that's all. I said, that's it. No paperwork, no nothing. Fly straight in. It's flying to Miami and then to Havana that made the difference. So I heard so many amazing musicians, amazing singers, amazing players. If you love music, you can't do better than going and seeing Havana play anywhere, any music in Cuba.
Yeah.
It's just amazing people.
I've been talking with Maurice Jacox, and a tangent that was, but a rewarding tangent, because to find out about your life and your connections with Cuba.
You started that.
I did start that. I'm guilty as charged. I got no regrets about that. You're singing Tuesday, November 28th.
Yes.
With We Still Are. As we wrap this thing up, what song are you most excited to sing?
Gosh. That's pretty hard because I've got maybe 2,500 songs I know.
2,500.
And in my book that I use for jazz or R&B, I've got 1,000 songs. And I tell my people when I do my jazz gigs with a smaller group, I just say, well, what do you want to sing first? It doesn't matter to me. I said, why not? I said, I love every one of them.
Yeah.
I said, every song that I sing, I love. Why I sing it, because I love it.
I had a bass teacher when I was in high school, and I was talking about which song I liked. He goes, you know what song's my favorite? The next song.
There. Yep. It's like that. But if I were, if put my feet to the fire for the best song that people hear next Tuesday, it's a little known Bill Withers song. And I don't know anybody that's heard the song or knows it. It's called My Imagination.
Hmm.
It's just this little intimate song. Just, I can't sing it without crying. I'm a known crier in songs. I'm sorry. And the lyrics go, when you appear in my imagination, I had no idea you'd ever be real. Now you're my life, not just some fascination. I love you now that you're here. And it's a beautiful, beautiful song. It has a bridge that goes, and now my dream talks to me and fixes my coffee in the morning and rubs my back when I'm weary. Thank you, dear. I love you now because you're here. It's just, it's such a sweet song. I love this song. Every time I sing this song, there's not a dry eye in the club. I mean, people blowing their nose, wiping their eyes, and it's just that beautiful song.
Yeah.
I mean, I love blasting and ripping, but tenderness always gets to me. I'm a sap.
Well, you're our sap. You're Minnesota sap. John Bream calls you Mr. Everything. I'll call you our Minnesota sap.
The Minnesota sap. That's that works. I'm a sap for music, yeah.
Maurice, the show is on Tuesday, not tomorrow, but 1 week from tomorrow over the Dakota. I so appreciate you visiting Jazz 88. We are so lucky to have you in our community, and we're so lucky that you're taking the stages that you are now and taking as many gigs as you can, and I appreciate
and
you for
our
that.
Our community, music community in Minnesota and listening community are so very blessed to have Jazz 88. It's the best jazz station in the country.
Well, thank you.
Three or four years ago, KPEM had 23 hours of jazz on the air.
Yeah.
daily. What the heck? Who has 23 hours of jazz?
Yeah.
And it's any kind of jazz you can think of. And that's just a true blessing for music lovers.
Yeah.
And the dedication of everybody at this station just blows me away. I'm honored to come and do an interview with one of my heroes, sort of, on the air. Yeah, it's a thrill, Sean.
Maurice, I appreciate you. Thank you for visiting us.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck at the show on Tuesday.
If I live.